Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is June 2nd, 2020, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Blood Pressure, Do Better, Keep Rising, with Norepi. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Max Hochstein. He was trained as an emergency physician at the University of Texas Southwestern and has just about finished his ICU fellowship at Emory and about to go to Georgetown to be an attending and practice a little bit of both. Welcome to the SGM, Max.
Howdy, y'all. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on, but I wonder, do you remember where we first met?
It was around 1 a.m. in the ASEP presidential suite at ASEP last year. We were gathered around a piano and you were wearing a very fabulous, probably knee-length, sparkly, sequency jacket.
It was a lab coat. It was medically oriented. It was a lab coat. It was red and white. I had a tremendous amount of liquid courage running through my veins. And for a Canadian, that means maple whiskey. And I was belting out Piano Man by Billy Joel when we first met.
Expertly, if I may add.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'm still surprised you wanted to do a podcast with me.
Of course. Who wouldn't want to do a podcast with someone who regularly dresses in sequins?
All right. Well, enough about this embarrassing moment. Let's get on with a case.
All right. So it's another day in your emergency department. 6 hours into your shift, you finish dispoing your really quick sign out from the night before. The triage nurse places a 61-year-old man with a fever, hypotension, cough into the smallest room in your emergency department. You scan through the electronic medical record and see that the blood pressure is 60 over 40. Being the astute emergency physician that you are, you surmise that this value is one number column short of normal. It's uncomfortably low. Is it time to start a norepinephrine infusion?
Max, I think we've covered sepsis more often on the SGEM than any other topic, and I'm including thrombolytics for stroke in that. But it was the landmark paper published 19 years ago by Dr. Emmanuel Rivers, or Manny Rivers, on early goal-directed therapy in the treatment of severe sepsis and septic shock that really sensitized the medical community to this issue. And this was published in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Sepsis is an important thing to talk about given the profound mortality that it bestows, especially when left untreated. One of the goals of early treatment of septic shock is to restore end organ perfusion. Significant effort has been placed on the administration of IV crystalloids to address concerns for hypovolemia and septic shock. However, it's become evident that patients are often over-resuscitated with IV fluids, which adversely impacts outcomes. As such, the idea of early norepinephrine administration to restore end organ perfusion and septic shock has been suggested.
I like how you said significant efforts have been placed on the administration of IV crystalloids. In other words, come on, Max, get with the guidelines. As if they weren't guiding your care, but telling you what to do. Guidelines should inform our care, should guide our care, but they shouldn't dictate our care. And trials that examine the outcome in shock historically have examined two types of outcomes. They have patient-oriented outcomes, or POOS, and monitor-oriented outcomes, or MOOS. Now, POOS focus on the occurrences that really matter to patients, while MOOS, not so much. Many trials examining vasoactive infusions use MOOS as an endpoint, targeted to the medication's intended use, something like increasing mean arterial pressure. Much like titrating a therapy to an outcome, MOOS are frequently much easier to monitor, so you can really get data on blood pressure, heart rate, mean arterial pressure, O2 sat, and things like that.
So the oldest adage in resuscitating the hypotensive patient, first fill the tank, has gone on largely unchallenged over the past several years. Oddly enough, however, shortening the duration of shock or time to shock resolution hasn't translated to measurably better outcomes.
So what's the clinical question we're going to try to address on this podcast?
Does starting norepinephrine earlier in septic shock lead to earlier shock control?
And what's the reference, Max?
Early use of norepinephrine in septic shock resuscitation, dubbed SENSOR, a randomized trial published in the Respiratory Critical Care Medicine Journal in 2019.
All right, let's go through the PICO. What was the population they included in their trial?
They included adult patients years 18 and older presenting to the emergency department with a mean arterial pressure, or MAP, under 65. Infection needed to be the suspected cause of the hypotension. Patients also had to meet 2012 surviving sepsis diagnostic criteria.
And there were a number of exclusions. And what I mean by a number of exclusions are they didn't include people who had acute cardiac or cerebral conditions, pulmonary edema, status asthmaticus, a GI bleed, pregnancy, burn, drug overdose, trauma, need for immediate surgery, and cancer. And we need to remember those things when evaluating a study, because they did not have those patients in this population. What was the intervention?
The intervention was early norepinephrine adjusted to 0.05 mics per kilo per minute for 24 hours plus usual care.
And what did they compare it to?
Placebo plus usual care, IV fluids, appropriate antibiotics, source control, and organ support as directed by the attending physician.
All right, let's run through the O, or the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
The primary outcome was shock control defined by a MAP greater than 65 by 6 hours after diagnosis of sepsis with hypotension together with adequate tissue perfusion.
Yeah, and for adequate tissue perfusion, they define that as having a urine outflow of greater than half a cc per kilogram per hour for two consecutive hours, or a decrease in serum lactate by more than 10% from the initial lactate level. How about the secondary outcomes?
The secondary outcomes were pretty exciting, actually, including 28-day mortality and hospital mortality, time from initial treatment to achieving target MAP and tissue perfusion goal, and within 6 hours, urine output within 6 hours, rate of respiratory failure requiring mechanical ventilator support, rate of renal failure requiring renal replacement therapy, lactate clearance, and number of organ support-free days to day 28 were also recorded.
So there were a lot of secondary outcomes, and I don't say outcomes. I don't say boot. It's not oot and a boot.
It stresses me out.
Take off, you hoser. So the author's conclusions were, quote, early norepinephrine was significantly associated with increased shock control by 6 hours. Further studies are needed before this approach is introduced in clinical resuscitation practice. End of quote. All right, Max, let's burn through the 11 quality checklist questions for randomized clinical trials. Are these ED patients?
Yes, they are.
Did they adequately randomize them?
They do.
Did they conceal them? At least the randomization.
They concealed.
The patients, were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
Yes.
Did they recruit the patients consecutively?
Yes.
The patients in both groups were similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes, they were.
Question 7. All participants, were they unaware of group allocation?
I'm unsure. I can't imagine people didn't notice when blood pressure shot up in the norepinephrine group. It would be very difficult to blind those effects.
We'll talk more about that in the nerdy section then. Question 8. All groups were treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Was follow-up complete?
Yes.
All patient-important outcomes were considered?
They were considered.
And do you think the treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
I'm unsure.
All right, let's run through the key results. They had 310 patients included in this trial. The median age was in the late 60s, with slightly more females. The main sources of infections were the urinary tract, 30%, pneumonia, 25%, intra-abdominal, 20%, and skin and soft tissue, 10%. But what was the primary outcome?
Shock control was significantly higher in the norepinephrine group.
Yeah, that primary outcome was shock control by 6 hours. And it was 76% in the early norepi group versus 48% in the control group. Now, Max, you mentioned a number of secondary outcomes. I will put together a table and put them in the blog for people to review some of them. But were there any that you really wanted to pull out and highlight?
Absolutely. There was less pulmonary edema in the patients that received early norepinephrine. In addition, patients achieved their target urine output in the norepinephrine group much more frequently. And interestingly enough, there was a higher incidence of new arrhythmia in patients who did not receive early norepinephrine.
Oh, so that would be the opposite of what you would expect. It was almost double. It was 11% for a new arrhythmia in the early norepi and 20% in the control group. All right, so let's talk nerdy then, because we've dealt with some of the key results. And we're going to have 5 points, and I'll lead it off with the first point, and that is time to shock control. Intuitively, you would think that the less time that people spend in a hemodynamic shambles, the better they would do. Think of all the trials that tried to improve that time to shock control, most significantly Corticus trial. This probably has something to do with our evolution and the human's ability to withstand wide ranges of hemodynamic derangements, although that's just a hypothesis. Regardless, no study has been able to show that the less time patients spend in shock, the better they will do.
The metric that they used for shock control, urine output and lactate clearance, were frankly suboptimal. Neither of these clearly demonstrates shock control. Lactate clearance is unreliable and can be quite misleading, especially in patients that are receiving therapies that increase the concentration of glycolytic intermediates or increase their clearance.
Well, the second point is about blinding, and you hinted at that earlier in the quality checklist. There's a possibility that the study was unblinded. This is because that norepi gives a rapid rise in blood pressure, which could be easily noticed by the treating clinicians. The unblinding could have introduced some bias into the trial, and the researchers could have controlled for this by checking the clinicians to guess patient group allocation. And then we would know if, at least we'd have more evidence if blinding was maintained.
The third nerdy point is about moos and poos, Ken. Do you really think patients care how long it took them to get shock control or what their lactate level or what their hourly urine output was or what their MAP was? These are monitor-oriented outcomes, or MOOs. Moo!
Oh, that was pretty good. What patients care about more, I think, is being alive, which would be a patient-oriented outcome, or a POO. An even better POO would be alive and physically well, neurologically intact, and having no long-term sequela because of the sepsis or the treatments they were provided. So we're looking for POOs, not MOOs.
All right, and as far as IV fluids go, early norepinephrine didn't decrease the amount of volume that people got. So maybe, despite having earlier shock control, the tendency was to complete the 30 mils per kilo mandate. It's a weird predicament we've placed ourselves into where we have to think about a catecholamine as a fluid-sparing agent. Our goal should be to stop people from going from raisin to grape so that we don't have to take them from grape to raisin later if we get the chance.
And the fifth point in this nerdy section is about adverse events. The observed adverse events in this trial also told us what we already know. Skin necrosis rates were equal between the two groups. Also note that half the patients got norepi through a peripheral line. There was less cardiogenic pulmonary edema, which you mentioned earlier, in the early norepi group. However, this was puzzling since the group received approximately the same amount of IV fluid. This may be because of the trivial beta 1 effects of norepi. And there was also less new onset arrhythmia, which you mentioned. It was half in the early norepi group compared to the control group. But those are the 5 nerdy points we wanted to run through. It's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
So we agree with the authors that norepinephrine raises blood pressure, MAP, urinary output, and lactate clearance. However, we did not need a study to tell us that. This makes this paper's conclusion no better than the Athos 3 trial. This paper showed that giving norepi early is feasible and not unreasonable.
All right, how about a bottom line, Max?
The bottom line is that early norepinephrine can change some MOOs, MAP, lactate, urinary output, but does not seem to change any POOs, in hospital or 28-day mortality, in adult patients with septic shock.
All right, that's the bottom line. Max, can you resolve the case that you presented?
While a bag of isotonic crystalloid of choice, read anything but normal saline, is being infused through one peripheral IV, fixed-dose norepinephrine at 0.05 mics per kilo per minute is started through the other. The patient is then taken to the intensive care unit where he makes a full recovery after 3 days of treatment for his community-acquired pneumonia.
So how are you going to take this publication and apply it clinically?
Frankly, this trial does not change anything for me. Hypotension is an emergency, and as emergency physicians, we are good at treating it. This was a well-designed trial that should generate tempered enthusiasm for early norepinephrine while further trials are being performed. The ongoing CLOVERS trial will hopefully shed some light on the many hypothesis-generating questions that the secondary outcomes of this trial left us with.
Ooh, I like that you identified that the secondary outcomes were hypothesis-generating, and then that those needed to be taken further in another trial to be answered properly. So that was really well done. What are you going to tell the patient?
I would tell my patient, you have pneumonia. This is an infection in your lungs. It is making your blood pressure to be dangerously low. We can increase your blood pressure by giving you some IV fluids. We can also raise your blood pressure with a medicine called norepinephrine. This medicine can be turned up to keep your blood pressure closer to normal while we give the antibiotics time to work.
All right, time to announce the Keener Contest winner, and that was Florenca Garcia Pintos Bica, and I'm sorry if I just destroyed your name. But you were the first person of many to get the correct answer about the number of motor vehicle mortalities in the U.S., and it was roughly 36,500. What's the question this week?
This trial was called Sensor, C-E-N-S-E-R. What is that device for used typically?
To be clear, we're talking about sensor with a C, and not sensor with an S, which you would have sensors attached to your monitor, leading to many moos, right? So we're talking about sensor with a C, and not censure, that's C-E-N-S-U-R-E, and that's to express severe disapproval of someone or something, especially in a formal statement. If you know what sensor device is typically used for, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there is some other FOMED out on this trial, and I will list those in the show notes, but one of them is from one of the SGEM faculty, Dr. Justin Morgenstern from First 10 EM. Max, I want to thank you for not being scared off by my sequenced lab coat, piano bar, maple syrup-inspired singing, and actually agreeing to come on the SGEM with me.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken. This was a blast.
Well, Max, you only have less than 3 weeks of your ICU fellowship, and then you are going to be heading off to be an attending at Georgetown. Safe travels, be well. You are one highly educated physician. Now, you still have one responsibility left, and that is to read the SGEM tagline. But you're going to have to do it in your best Southwestern Texas accent.
All of my relatives in Brooklyn will be very disappointed in me. All right, but here we go. Remember to be skeptical of anything y'all learn, even if you learned it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.